U.S. today is a city bursting with entrepreneurial spirit. Beyond tech and startups, there are also plenty of opportunities for success in reimagining time-honored craft and service. In the hospitality sector, Amistan Paris is reshaping the idea of a hotel stay in the City of Light. But the boutique property in the stylish 8th arrondissement is not about luxury, rather a sense of space and connection, with all the charm and top service you'd expect from a hotel with just 24 rooms. Amistan is the vision of self-starter Ziad Sanhaji. Armed with his family's entrepreneurial spirit, know-how from a range of jobs in hospitality, and experience working with real estate consulting firm Jones Lang LaSalle, Sanhaji opened the hotel a few years back at age 27. With beautiful and functional design meant to entice interaction, regular events and gallery showings, and all the comforts of staying in a home, Amistan is the perfect space for those looking for a little bit more during their stay in the French capital. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bage. For this week's episode, I sat down with Sanhaji at our Midori House studio to hear the story of Amistan and his plans to create a collection of intimate city houses in the near future.
We're trying to make people basically feel as comfortable and curious when they're not home. I mean, that's essentially what we do at Amistan, is really kind of going beyond providing a bed and lodging or, you know, that prefabricated experience and just have them feel good and kind of trigger that sense of curiosity in them. So creating a place that runs on human connections.
But on the face of it, I guess a lot of people would assume that you operate in the luxury hotel sector. So how do you define both trying to have a place of connection but also a really nice place?
I actually do not consider us in the luxury sphere. I think we're definitely high end, and we really do try to show a different kind of value. So I could talk about luxury if you look at the details, but by the traditional sense, people tend to see something a little bit more uptight, a lot of that ornated sense of luxury. Now, as the hospitality has developed, we're seeing more modern ways of executing on luxury standards. But I think our proximity to guests makes it that we're actually not luxury, simply because we really do want guests to just be relaxed. The house policy is that it's like a house, literally, which is also the idea of having such a intimate physical setting and keeping it within a fairly small room count to really keep that gist and that proximity to the guests. So
how do you then define what it is you do? You're wanting people to be comfortable as if they're in a house, but they're at a hotel, right? So what would be the experience if I arrived? How would you describe that?
I think it's important to respect the fact that it is a hotel and people are coming to you because you're a hotel. So the idea is not to erase those reference points. I think people need to identify easily where the staff is, the front desk, etc. You know, breaking down too many barriers actually get to confuse people, and we see it in a fair amount of brand new, groundbreaking concepts. And that's not where I want to go. The sense of, you know, 99% of the hotels are going to pitch the home away from home thing since the 90s. So we're not reinventing the wheel. What's novel about the way we go about it is really that back to basics approach. It's really kind of focusing on making you feel good. When you get into a hotel, you tend to look around, look for reference points, things that seem familiar that you can actually kind of keep until you feel a little bit more relaxed and kind of take a little bit more ownership of the space. We try to minimize that time as much as possible. As you try to look around and find all these different reference points, we try to basically know more about you so that we can let you be with your habits in our home, so that we let you take ownership of the space. We let you actually live the way you used to. The only thing that's going to defer is that you could be a little bit more whimsical, and that we will provide you that outlet to potentially very interesting conversations with other guests, people we collaborate with. And that's what I mean by curiosity, is that we really act as, I guess, physical anchor where some of the super interesting conversations will take place should you want them to. If you don't, then live your life like you're used to but in a very comfortable way, the way that we're making it for you.
Tell me a bit more about that connection. I understand events may be part of it, but in day-to-day, someone that is your guest, how then do you get them to engage with other people or other guests?
I think the mere nature of the space and the way we've designed the space actually induces that kind of interaction. It's a 24-room hotel spread on 6 floors. We have about 4 rooms per floor. The common areas have been sort of designed in a way that would engage people with a long table or in the garden. So I think the physical space already kind of induces that kind of exchange. Beyond just the pure setting, is it goes from the way the staff actually addresses people and makes them relate to one another and actually see that the kind of people that come here, granted, they're not all the same, because we need in a hotel, you need a lot of different kinds of people to fill it throughout the year. There is that common denominator of people who understand who we are and what is it that we do, and allows them to relate to one another easier. So I think that lack of pretension and that open-mindedness that we try to promote through various little things. So, you know, you were talking about the events. There are a one-off, but they're also part of our DNA now. You know, all these collaborations we're doing are 100% organic. You know, all of them just kind of came up, and we still had a fairly sustained rhythm throughout. But it goes from that to literally just witnessing guests discussing things over breakfast on the high table and actually priding ourselves on those kind of connections.
Does that feed into your background, I guess, as someone that started their own business in those connections and wanting to start those conversations and hoping there's sparks between different people?
Yeah, I think it's a mix of exactly what you said, but also my cultural background, probably. I'm Tunisian originally. There's that sort of natural warmth to wanting to share stuff, you know, whether it is food or whether it is a moment or whether it is a conversation, you always tend to kind of gather to have that one common thing that we're all doing, even if it's just talking. So, you know, there's very few lunches that are intimate in a way, but that's kind of fueled a very profound desire to want to share the good things. And when you couple that with, I guess, a more professional curiosity, then you say, okay, well, how can I actually convey that intrigue into people without making it gimmicky, you know, without making it like a huge point out of it? You know, we're not literally introducing people, obviously, but it's a way of making them feel so natural that they actually open up. It's not about manufacturing connections. Which is why it's maybe a little bit hard to kind of crystallize when you describe it, but it really is something that just tends to happen thanks to the way people feel.
I want to chart back a little bit and hear about your introduction to hospitality, how you got into that, where your sort of interest in being a host to people.
I've known that I wanted to be in that business since I was 14. I think I was lucky enough to always abide by, you know, what is it that I actually enjoy doing? You know, what is it that I like to do? And having benefited from that multicultural background, as I said, I'm Tunisian. I was born in the Caribbean, so I lived all my childhood in the Caribbean, and then my teenage life in Paris, and then later on, my more, I guess, young adult life in the U.S., naturally kind of made me look at travel and all the various cultures that I got to discover. And the worlds that we're creating through that travel, which are our hotels. And what fascinated me is that we were really creating a whole world just to please people. And that seems very strange to me, given how much work you actually have to put into it. So I started getting really fascinated by that. Started in a fairly silly way, collecting hundreds of hotel key cards when I was young. And then I ended up working in those hotels, not just hotels. It wasn't all glamorous. I worked from fast foods to gastronomic restaurants to nice hotels. So I basically did a lot of small jobs and internships. Fast foods were great. I think it's at a young age, it was a wonderful experience. It allowed me to understand the value of consistency. And really, okay, granted, I was repeating onion, lettuce, tomato every 2 seconds, but at least managed to see the, you know, to take a peek at what those huge chains were doing, because they are extremely efficient and consistency is definitely key, no matter how luxurious you want to be. And then I started interning in gastronomic restaurants. Obviously, it was a drastic change. The first one, I was 17. Literally, the most vivid memory from that was me scraping the kitchen from floor to ceiling and emptying containers of liters of squid ink, which I can't even start describing. It was actually also quite amazing because obviously I didn't do just that, but that was the main chunk of it, was peeling potatoes and cleaning those batches. And then you get to do the mise en place, and then you get to do the plating, and then you realize that every single little task, no matter how tedious it is, actually ends up having a big impact on the final product, right? And that final product creates just such a moment of pleasure to the end guest that you feel that everything was actually worth it, you know? Even if being a teenager, you tend not to be very receptive to those kind of experience. In hindsight, it actually taught me a lot as to how do you actually build quality. And it has to be done on a block-by-block basis. And then I interned also in hotels until going to college. I basically worked as a butler at one of the Palace hotels in Paris. That was also very different. Every room was a whole new story with a completely different culture and lifestyle, etc. So it was more a matter of knowing how to adapt. And, you know, I pride myself on my multicultural background, but at least I was fairly challenged at that point. And then I decided through my college experience to head the same direction, but maybe in a different route or get there in a different way. And I started getting interested in hotel real estate. The idea was, when I was younger, I thought, why would I, you know, I don't need to make it a point to earn as much money as possible if I can live all of my life in luxury. You know, I was a bit naive, but that was the thinking. Later, I guess my aspirations grew and my conception of hospitality as well. And I basically figured, why just live in it if you can actually contribute to creating it? And that's how I ended up in hotel real estate, studied it, and then worked at a global advisory, real estate advisory firm that had a specialized practice in hotels. And that was, I guess, my version of a master's degree, you could say. It was basically witnessing a lot of different kinds of hotels, from side road hotels to ultra luxury ones, meeting all kinds of owners and investors and managers and employees, and seeing how every single one of those hotels were structured. So it was quite eye-opening. And then I decided, with all that knowledge, I guess, or that experience amassed, to finally act upon that long-awaited adventure and make concrete that passion of mine, and started creating Amastan, essentially.
Yeah, I'm really curious about sort of the business side of things. The growth and learning more about the hospitality side seems quite natural, and really interesting steps that you took. But is there something about you that you think is entrepreneurial, or that, you know, the business side was attractive to you? And how did you learn about that, going about sort of setting up your own company?
One side of it was really leveraging the, I guess, more academic knowledge that you get from the corporate world into more of a Wild West kind of setting. When you go from working at a multinational company in the US to landing on a small construction site with French workers, the divide is quite strong. So the idea is that you really kind of have to take a step back and really figure out what's the best way of approaching all these different problems that basically arise during, whether it is the construction or the operations, as you start hiring the new team that's going to execute upon your vision. It isn't easy in France to open your hotel before your 30s. People have a fair amount of misconceptions, and you really do have to pick your battles and know when you can actually fight for what is deserved. So it was a long-winded road, and I think I've learned a lot from every single little step. I think I could, you know, point out every single piece of electrical wire. My nature is that I'm fairly hands-on, so I was on the construction site from 8 in the morning till 6 p.m. and then to the office from 6 p.m. to midnight for about 2.5 years. And I think you need that kind of stamina and that kind of fuel to operate A, in France, and B, in the entrepreneurial world, especially when you can feel that it's within you, but you haven't had the chance to actually bring it out of you. You know, my parents are from a ground-up entrepreneurial background as well. They literally have, you know, built everything from scratch. So that's something that I've always looked up to, and that, you know, made me go forward no matter what challenge was or obstacle was in my way. But you really do need to challenge that status quo constantly. People, especially in a traditional industry like the hotel one, things and people tend to be fairly sedentary. They tend to be fairly inert. And if you actually don't take it upon yourself and just assume that there's a system that you should abide by, then you quickly realize that nothing gets done.
You talked about the difficulty of doing business in France and getting started. Is that on the investment side and getting backers? And I'm curious about the sort of young entrepreneur title, how you think about that, because that doesn't really seem fair in your eyes.
It isn't unfair for the simple reason that when you want to do business in France, that's the cost of doing business. That's just the one barrier to entry you have. There are others, but that's definitely a main one. In every geographical location, you'll have one. It wasn't so much about finding backers, because it's a project that we did on our own, and really kind of through the hours and the sweat, we actually basically went, persuaded banks, took out a loan, and did it. It's more a matter of showing, without showing aggressivity, actually being fierce and earning that credibility. The entrepreneurial world in France has evolved a lot as it's gotten younger, both in general as well as in hotels. In hotels, younger is relative, but it has gotten younger. So we start seeing a different generation wanting to do bigger and better things, but not rushing towards it. And I think that's really kind of what allows us to operate in this fairly hostile environment, business environment, because we take the time of figuring things out to actually end up having a quality product. And you can see from the market now, there is definitely a rise in quality across the board, especially in that boutique hotel segment. Now, we each have our own positioning and we each do things our own ways. I think the one thing that is lacking in France is that more international mindset. Things tend to be very local, which is good, but it doesn't translate in the service. So you often get that, you know, cliche reactions when you ask for something that's a little bit out of the ordinary. But from a purely business standpoint, I really do think that it is, you know, from that one first handshake, when I walked onto the construction site for the first time, they thought I was an intern at this design studio, you know. And these things manifest themselves in this tiniest little detail every day. So you just got to keep on plowing and actually showing what is it that you can do and having people just understand for themselves, really.
It's interesting you talk about the entrepreneurial spirit and perhaps a resurgence of that in France right now. A lot of it seems to be, or our idea of it seems to be rooted in sort of a tech startup, cool company culture and people wanting to do that whole thing. But it also seems that young people are really thrilled with the idea of rethinking traditional industries, be it the bakery or something like that. And is that happening in a wider sense in the hospitality sector, do you think? Or is there a market for that?
Well, I definitely do think there's a market. Otherwise, I wouldn't really be venturing and sort of dedicating so much of my life to this project. It's hard. People are used to be fairly hyperactive and just want to roll out as many brands and consume as many products as possible, etc. So it's hard for someone who's bound to a physical building. It takes time. When you take 2 years to get a building out of grounds, and that you see that in the meantime, five of your friends have launched their brands online and are already sort of getting that exposure and are ramping up and they're doing fantastically well. It's super inspiring. But at the same time, you just keep on looking back and forth and seeing that thing is still not built. There's definitely an understanding that people should develop to the fact that there's different paces. In our industry, it's completely different. You could definitely have that startup feel and train your teams in this very inclusive way, which is what we do, and be very young, develop things at a fast pace. but you're still bound to the physical structure. And that forces you to work on the quality of the product. So I think in the end, it's a blessing in disguise. You know, we're talking earlier about getting investors and funding for a project. There is definitely this trend where you see a lot of startups just racing to raise as scale as fast as possible, raise as much money as possible, and just roll out products. And they know that they're heading in the right overall direction. They're just not quite sure the product is already fully refined. I'm in the exact opposite end of it. I need to have a product that's fully refined before being able to start sprinting. And not a lot of people understand that. It's quite tricky, but I think if you're aware of where you're heading and you had time to really craft that path, that vision, then people will actually end up doing a lot of great things from a purely artisanal and craftsmanship origin.
I'm curious, since you opened the doors to your construction process you talked about, what is your idea for the property? And does that look like the business you operate today?
I wish I could say that everything's already how I envisioned it. The vision is such that it keeps on growing and we keep on getting more inspired by, you know, some of our friends, our peers, guests that come up and really kind of pushing its boundaries outwards. I can confidently say that we're at a stage right now where we know where we stand and we could definitely start assessing new opportunities. So that's actually very rewarding. But from the idea that what we wanted to do with Amastan and where we are now, it's all about just keeping on refining those details as we just gather more feedback from clients and kind of react to it and always trying to maintain a fluid and dynamic way of working. That's what sets us apart from any other hotel. It's because we're small, we're young-minded, and we can actually integrate that fairly fast. Hotel owners tend to be either very financial or a little bit older and thus more static in both cases. So we can just adapt much, much quicker. And the more you do, the more things you want to do. But I think for now, what Amastan stands for is really that place where people do not need glitters. They don't need that overabundance of services where you have, you know, five restaurants, one ice skating rink, one bowling alley. You know, it's not about that anymore. I really do believe there's this sort of thin layer of travelers, of fairly sophisticated travelers that are young-minded. They don't need to be young. They just are young-minded and are looking for a place that's discreet, that's elegant, where there's definite life, where there's a conversation going, or at least a potential for one, and where they can just feel good. Going back to those essentials is really what motivates me, because I think out of this hecticness and this extremely fast pace that we find right now, we tend to forget that could be very cool and very entertaining and very loud so that we can brand it as, you know, as a cool lifestyle experience and put as many marketing words as you want so that all the millennials would show up. To me, it's not about that. My passion for hospitality is prior to all these trends. And the vision has been fairly the same for a while, which is just do something that's sincere. And that's where I really want to keep on heading.
I'm curious what your target client is then, what your target guest is. You mentioned they don't necessarily have to be young, but let's say I'm on a business trip and the company wants to cut costs. I'm staying at an Airbnb or I'm staying at whatever hotel can be afforded. But what's the type of person that you can reach that is going to spend money to come stay with you for both the experience and the property?
Like I said earlier, we need all kinds of people to bring life to a hotel throughout the year. But our core demand, which is the one that we've managed to successfully attract, tends to be creative professionals. So usually a lot of the times they're here for work and they extend their stay for leisure purposes and to kind of check out the city, which is why we try to gear them towards, you know, spots that we like that are not necessarily close to the hotel or that are maybe a little bit more of a hole-in-the-wall kind of recommendation. But a lot of the times they're, I guess, if you want to talk about pure demographics, which I think is less and less relevant, but from this pure stats, it's a 35 to 45 young creative professionals, surprisingly, predominantly women. I haven't yet discovered why, because that wasn't an intent, but it's quite agreeable, it's quite pleasant. I read an article a long time ago that was talking about psychographics as opposed to demographics, and I think it really is about that. You know, you could have editor of a magazine just hanging out in the garden and just wanting to be chilled and have his coffee and not wanting to be bothered, just like you can have someone who actually wants to spend more time in the bar and interact with people. And it's really, if you understand that we're a small house and you want to be interacting with us, not necessarily all the time, we adjust, but if you do want that kind of intimacy, then I think you're going to be drawn naturally to small places, and then you're going to start looking for what small places are fairly modern, or actually at least convey that modern sense of life. And surprisingly, there aren't a lot out there. Not talking just about Paris or France. Even when you look at the more global lodging landscape, I only stay in hotels if they're below 50 keys. And I sometimes call and ask them how many rooms they have, because it really does model the kind of service you're going to get. And a lot of people do the same. At least that's my belief. And they do the same because they understand that putting aside all the gimmicks, putting aside, you know, unlayering all that experience, force feeding, as I call it, that human component is really what's going to actually strike that chord and make them just feel good, come back and talk to people about it. It's encouraging. I think it's motivating. It's inspiring to see that we see more and more hotels that I view as sister hotels in different locations around the world. And I hope that one day we will be able to kind of have a little bit more of a sort of parcours of a route where people could understand that, you know, this hotel actually resembles me and we share the same crowd, because people that just hang out in the middle of nowhere in Tuscany to actually interact with artists that they have in residence enjoy that more chilled urban experience that we give. And they may go to Marrakesh and find a very similar experience with very similar people that like to travel and live the same way.
In so much as you can say, do you have plans then to open other properties?
Yeah, that's definitely the plan. Can't talk specifics, but we're definitely at the moment assessing new opportunities. It is a gateway sort of urban product meant for big gateway cities, because that contrast is also what kind of helps us, right? Being so small and quaint and candid in big urban environment is really what allows us to drive most value to our guests. So we're looking definitely to expand first in Europe in some key cities, and then we'll see. There's a few cities that are non-seasonal, so not too much sun and urban in Europe. So that already strikes out a lot of potential hosting cities, but that's definitely the point, and to keep it fairly intimate. So again, a low-key count with a differentiating element, whether it may be a garden or something else.
And that brings us to the end of today's program. Thank you to Ziad Sanhaji for sharing the story of Amistan Paris. Thank you as well to Christy Evans for mixing this show. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.